So I'm going to welcome Gus Becker tonight. My name is Wendy Wolf, and I'm the transitioning education associate. I'm excited to have you all here. Gus is here as a bear expert of the Northwest. We're really excited. I'm particularly excited because I'm new to Holden, and I want to make friends with bears. I want to know how to not make enemies with bears. So comes with a wealth of information and experience and an impressive resume with U.S. Forest Service, as well as an alpine and Nordic ski instructor, and fabulous things makes from Wenatchee. So thank you, Gus, for being here, and welcome, and I hope you enjoy it. I also want you to know that it is a recorded session, so any questions or comments you make will be recorded as well. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Okay, well, thank you. Welcome. I have tonight a presentation on black bears and grizzly bears. So what I'll do is kind of give an overview of the different bear species worldwide, talk a little bit about some of the controversy with bears here in Washington State, then I'll go into the natural history of grizzly bears and black bears, talk a little bit about what they eat, hibernation, and then I'll talk a little bit about coexisting with bears. So if you live here in Holden, or if you own a home that's in bear country, I'll talk a little bit about how to get along with bears. And then at the very end, there'll be a quiz on how I'll quiz you on, by the end of this, the lecture, you should be expert on the differences between grizzly bears and black bears, and I'll quiz you to see how much you learned if you can actually tell the difference between a black bear and a grizzly bear. And go ahead and ask questions anytime during the slides. Just raise your hand and yell at me. So I have a 30-second slideshow of two sibling juvenile grizzly bears play fighting in Alaska. And if somebody could hit the lights over there. Is that good enough? Can you see?
There we go. Yeah, that's good.
No sound to this. Yeah, you can add the sound.
Ow!
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 Leave me alone!
Alright. Background: I'm a wildlife biologist. I have a degree in wildlife biology, and I also have a forestry degree from the University of Idaho. When I graduated from school, I went right into a position as a research biologist with the Forest Service, and I got sent to Olympia, Washington, where I was involved with the spotted owl research. It was in 1987, and that was when the spotted owl was just becoming an issue in the Pacific Northwest. I did spotted owl research. I did a research project on flying squirrels, which I think I'll develop a presentation about flying squirrels the next time I come up. I was utterly amazed when I released my first flying squirrel, watch it climb 100 feet up into an old growth forest and then launch itself And this is a squirrel, spread its 4 feet and watch it just do this through the forest and land on another tree. I was forever mesmerized with those little guys. But so then I went on, I did research on pine martens. I did research on bushy-tailed wood rats. I'm probably leaving something else out. And then recently I got involved with large carnivores. So I started working with bears, cougars, wolves, wolverines, et cetera, et cetera. I always start out my lecture that, you know, I like to prepare people to leave the modern world and go into the animal world and learn and experience what the bear, in this case bears, how they see the world. This is just a preview. Tomorrow night I'll be talking about cougars. Today's Tuesday, so Thursday night I will be talking about wolves, and then Friday I'll be talking about wolverines. And tonight is grizzly bears and black bears. So, our perception of bears, it starts really young with when, you know, you're born and you get a teddy bear. And it's cuddly and you play with it. And it's lovable. And then, you know, when you grow up in the media, in the movies, then the other perception of the bear is this man-eating, 12-foot tall, 1,000-pound, human, deer-eating, squirrel-eating machine. And those are two extremes. But the reality is that bears are not either of those. The reality is somewhere in the middle, as you'll find out. So one of the things in Washington State, when I do bear lectures, I come across many different people, and I come across very animal-loving, extreme people that want to hug the bears. And I come across people that are very scared and very anti-bear or anti-carnivore. And so there are these misconceptions, particularly in Washington State, and particularly when I talk about grizzly bears, because the grizzly bear is somewhat controversial in Washington, as you'll find out. But there are people that believe that we're bringing grizzly bears down from Canada and releasing them in the North Cascades. That's not true. We also are not bringing them in by Black Hawk helicopters in the middle of the night. The government is not loading grizzly bears up in BC, flying in darkness, and then dropping them off in Washington State. They've always been here, and although their population is dwindling and has dwindled to almost zero, as I'll talk about in a minute. The North Cascades has great grizzly bear and black bear habitat. It's one of the largest identified bear habitats in the lower 48. This photo, just over the border from us, Canada has a somewhat healthy population of grizzly bears, and they do drop down occasionally from Canada and into Washington State. A little bit of overview. There are eight different species of bears in the world, and six of them are threatened or endangered. The six that are threatened and endangered: the panda, the polar bear, the Asiatic black bear, the brown bear or grizzly bear in the lower 48, the sun bear, which is in Indonesia, and the sloth bear, which is in the Himalayas. So six of the eight are currently threatened or endangered. All right, so the grizzly bear in the lower 48, 200 years ago, you can see the range, this light blue, this blue is the historic range of the grizzly bear in North America. And the green is its current range. As you can see, right now, currently, the grizzly bear range in the lower 48 is only 2% of what its former range was. And it's 2% of its of the numbers that it used to be historically. Alaska has a healthy grizzly bear population, somewhere in the range of 30,000. This is photo was shot between 1900 and 1920. It's actually, this is on Lake Chelan. So somewhere, let's say 1910, this was the norm. Your local hunter or trapper would go out and shoot and hunt grizzly bears. This is a cougar pelt, a mountain goat. That looks like a lynx to me. And I have no idea what these are, maybe wolves. In the early 1900s, there were no hunting regulations. There were no trapping regulations. So you could go out and hunt and trap whatever you wanted. As human influence grew, bear habitat started to disappear. We built highways and interstates, and our influence has influenced greatly the range and the ability of grizzly bears and black bears to live. We've paved too many parking lots, and we've built too many roads. And all this had an effect on the bears, so that the grizzly bear population just dwindled. Currently, in Washington State, the estimate is that there's probably 5 to 10 grizzly bears left in Washington State. So I get this question a lot. It's been 60 or 70 years since people have talked about grizzly bears in the North Cascades, and sometimes people are surprised that we actually have or had grizzly bears in the North Cascades. These little dots, sorry, that's not a great slide, but these little dots are grizzly bear observations, and the outline here is...
Excuse me.
This outline is what we call the North Cascades Grizzly Bear Recovery Area, or ecosystem area. So between 1950 and 1991, there were 81 highly probable class two, what they call a class two sighting. There were 20 confirmed class one sightings. And a class one sighting is a biologist saw the bear, and so the biologist knows what he's looking at. It's a class one sighting is mainly a bear carcass, an actual grizzly bear carcass, a grizzly bear track, I can't remember what the other ones are. In these years, we've only had 20 confirmed class one sightings. As far as this area, I think it was 1978, a grizzly bear and two cubs were sighted at Moore's Point, which is just across from Lucerne, where you got off the boat. It would be on the north side of Lake Chelan. There was actually a sighting there back in 1978. So in 2010, a hiker was out in the North Cascades and took this photo. And this was, this created great excitement in the biology community because this hiker was out, he took these pictures, he went home, he didn't really think anything about it. He showed them to a friend like 6 months after he had taken the picture, and his friend said, "That looks like a grizzly bear. You should report that." So his friend convinced him to turn the photos in. These photos were circulated among all the bear experts in the Northwest, and they decided that that was a grizzly bear. Mm-hmm. So this, in 2010, we got our first Class 1 confirmed grizzly bear sighting in many, many years. And you can see the classic hump and the big rump.
So where was this in the North Cascades?
It was on the east side up in North Cascades National Park.
Okay.
On the east side of the crest. This is a grizzly bear, but this photo was taken in Canada, and it was at a station where they pile up a bunch of sticks and put some scent in it, and they set up cameras, and they got this picture of this grizzly bear. This is a classic grizzly bear photo, really long claws, kind of a dished flat face and short ears. So this is the North Cascades Recovery Area in Washington. There is a small population of grizzly bears up in the Selkirks, northeast. And this area includes Idaho and parts of Montana.
What does recovery area mean?
So, yeah, it's a good question. I'll get to that in 1 second, because I have a slide coming up. What it means is that... I'll wait for the slide because I can't remember the dates.
Okay.
But some biologists got together and they developed a plan to try to bring grizzly bears back to Washington State. And so they went out and looked at where would be the best habitat for bears, and they identified the North Cascades as being the best area in Washington State to try to bring back bears. So you remember that photo I showed you of Lake Chelan? Well, in the Hudson Bay Fur Trapping Company, used to keep immaculate records. So between this span of a little over 30 years in Washington State, they exported almost 4,000 grizzly bear hides out of the North Cascades. These are records from the fur trapping records from the Hudson Bay Company. So here's your question about what a recovery area is. So in 1975, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service determined that the grizzly bear was threatened in the lower 48. And then in 1983, this group was formed called the Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee. It was a group of biologists that got together and they put their heads together and said, well, what can we do? If we don't do something, the grizzly bears are going to disappear from the lower 48. And what they did is they identified 6 recovery areas where there's good bear habitat. And the 6 areas are the North Cascades, which actually includes part of Canada, the Selway Bitterroots, the Yellowstone, the Northern Cascades, Glacier Park, the Selkirk. So the biologists identify these areas where they are going to try to manage for bear habitat. And what that means is, for example, if you were a logging company and you wanted to log in the Selway Bitterroot, if you were going to build a road that was anywhere near bear habitat, they weren't going to let you do that. So these areas have been identified to protect the habitat So hopefully the grizzly bear population will either come back on its own or they'll be augmented. The North Cascades Recovery Zone is the largest of the six. It's 10,000 square miles. 40% of the area in here is federal wilderness area. 90% is federal or state land. And really key, this is real key, 70% has no motorized access. That's crucial for bear habitat. It means there's not going to be any disturbance or little disturbance by humans. So that's a little bit about the history. Before I go on, the current state of the grizzly bear recovery plan is North Cascades National Park and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are right now, as we speak, they're finishing up an environmental impact statement. And one of the alternatives in that environmental impact statement is to actually augment the supposed 5 or 10 bears that are left in Washington. They're proposing to actually bring 5-6 grizzly bears and release them in the North Cascades. That's part of the plan.
So are they coming from Canada?
I don't know where they're going to get them. My guess is that they will bring some from Yellowstone. Yeah.
Is there any pushback from the local human community?
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, I'll talk a little bit about that. But it's controversial. So Washington State. Okanagan County, which is the county north of Lake Chelan, it's the largest county in Washington State. It's a very outspoken kind of a ranching, logging, sheep community. So they're very vocal about not wanting any grizzly bears. They don't want anything coming in and eating their sheep or cattle, which we'll talk about, is really they're misinformed because grizzly bears don't really, they'll eat a cow, but there are 10 other things that will kill your cow or sheep before a grizzly bear even gets anywhere near. So, it's controversial.
What is the perfect candidate for, as a grizzly, what is the perfect candidate for relocation? What age class, that sort of thing?
What they would relocate?
No, I'm just saying, if you had a choice of bears to relocate, how would you identify that?
My guess is that it would have to be over 5 years old, because the females will not reproduce until they're five. At 5 years, they've established that they're good at keep staying alive, because a grizzly bear mother normally will have on a good normal food year will have two cubs, and only one of those will survive the first year. The mortality is high, and the reproductive rate of grizzly bears is very slow. It's actually, there's only one North American mammal that has a slower reproductive rate than the grizzly bear, and that's the muskox way up in the Arctic. So if you bring, let's say 5 or 10 grizzly bears into the North Cascades, it is going to be 10 or 15 years, 20 years before you get even close to a population of recovered bears. Yeah?
What's the gestation period?
That's a good question. So grizzly bears have a thing called delayed implantation. So they will mate in May, June, and July, and then the embryo won't implant into the uterus unless the bear is healthy and can sustain a newborn. If it's a low food year or the bear is diseased or unhealthy, that egg will never implant in the uterus. But the gestation period, so they, you know, they mate in May, June, and July. The implantation probably occurs in September, October, and then the young are born in February in the den, in the middle of the winter. Typical grizzly bear habitat. If you've gone hiking outside of Holden, these high meadows, high alpine area. This is all beautiful grizzly bear habitat, which is what I see when I go hiking outside of Holden. So a little bit about grizzly bears and their natural history. Contrary to what you may have heard, they're shy. They don't want human interaction. They live up to 20 or 30 years. The longest lived grizzly bear in the wild that we know of has lived 37 years. Breed in May and July. They go into their dens in October and November, and they emerge in March and April. The young are born in February. Now, when they go into hibernation, for these, they go in and they disappear in November. They don't eat. They don't defecate. They don't urinate. They are in a complete state of that it's so foreign to us, but imagine the implications of humans, like for space travel, if we could learn to hibernate. If we don't eat, we don't defecate, we don't urinate for months, or the implications for like diabetes or diabetics when your liver goes out. It's amazing to me, very, very amazing. So when they go into their dens, you don't see them until March and April. Of course, nothing's absolute in nature. With climate change, you can see bears in December. It depends on the winter, and you can see bears in February. It depends on the temperature and the climate. It's unusual, but as our climate warms, it's going to change the bear denning behavior. And I don't know how that all is going to affect the whole web of life that I have an example of. So climate change and bear, we could be altering the bear's natural rhythms. With the changing climate. So some more characteristics about bears, and this goes for black bears and grizzly bears. They have an incredible sense of smell. It's eight to nine times better than that of a hound dog. They are fast. They can run 35 miles an hour. So you're not going to be able to outrun a bear. And if you're hiking with your buddy, you're safe if you can run faster than him.
That's right.
So here's some comparison on the reproductive cycle between black bears and grizzly bears. So female grizzly bears won't breed until they're 5 or 6. Black bears breed about 4. This is common for both species, usually twins. If it's a low food year, they'll have one cub. Grizzly bear young stay with the mother all the way up until like 3.5 years.
They nurse that whole time?
No.
Okay.
No. They quit nursing when they get out of the den. A month after they get out of the den.
Otherwise, they couldn't go to school.
So the average female will mate every 3 years. If the grizzly bear lives to be 20 or 30 years old, they may produce 10 cubs. A black bear will produce about 24. But here's the key, 50% of those cubs won't make it. They will die because of predation, illness, disease, injury. This is interesting. When the bears are born in the den, they're about the size and weight of a ground squirrel. And then feeding on the mother's milk when they come out after a year, they're about 80 times heavier, which would be the equivalent of about an 800-pound human baby. The mother's milk's incredible. The mother raises the bear cubs. The male bear has no help in raising. He's just there for his reproductive abilities. A little bit about their home ranges, 50 to 300 square miles for the females, and the males, 200 to 500 square miles. Interesting fact, bears aren't territorial. They don't, particularly if there's lots of food around, they'll share the food, and they don't fight over a 10 square mile, which when you come and listen to my lectures about the wolves, the cougars, and the wolverines, it's a whole different story about how the wolves, the cougars, and the wolverines stake out their territory and won't let others come in. Black bears are generally found in forested areas. They're tree climbers. Black bear claw is an inch and a half to 2 inches long, and they're tree climbers. Grizzly bears have 2-inch claws, about as long as my index finger, and they're used for digging. What do bears eat? Surprisingly, 90% of a black bear and a grizzly bear diet is vegetation. They're opportunistic omnivores, meaning they eat plants and they eat meat. In all the studies which is easy to do, you just go pick up bear scat. In all the studies, everywhere you go, you get roughly this breakdown. And lo and behold, only about 10% of a bear's diet is actual meat. The bears are eating a lot of grass and a lot of forbs. And forbs are just non-herbaceous grasses, so flowers is a forb. In the North Cascades, there are over 100 different plant species that are bear eats. And this is what they're eating on right now. Paintbrush, skunk cabbage, devil's club, although we don't have any devil's club in this area. Fireweed, all that fireweed from the fires, bears are out there munching on it. Western white pine, they love the cone, the seeds out of there. So when they come out in the spring, they go right to the grasses and the plants. They have a mammal stomach. They don't have a stomach that, like a cow, where they can digest cellulose. So they'll look for the freshest, easiest, and most chewable plants and grasses. Where do they get their meat? A lot of it's particularly up here in Holden. There's all these avalanche chutes where in the winter deer will get caught in the avalanche chutes. So the grizzly bears are smart, and they go to all these avalanche chutes at the bottom and start foraging around and find these carcasses, and they'll eat these deer that have been killed over the winter. And they're not prolific hunters. They will eat. Deer, and they'll take porcupines. They'll take squirrels when they can. But they're not unlike the cougars. They're not really prolific hunters. This is just some example of what they eat in the spring. It's all these fresh grasses growing where the snow's melting away. Later in the summer, you'll start seeing them open up logs and dig up roots. They love plant roots.
What are they getting in the logs?
What's that?
What are they getting in the
grubs.
Logs? Grubs.
Grubs and ants. And the outer carapace or shell of the ants show up in the scat. It's not digested, so you can open up a bear scat and see the ant pieces in there. So this is very interesting. Here's my web of life, circle of life example. So there is a moth called the army cutworm moth, and it's about this size. And in the summer, it will go to these talus slopes and go underneath the rocks in the heat of the day, and they'll estivate or rest. It's kind of the insect's short-term hibernation. And the grizzly bears have figured this out. And so they will go and they will spend days, they'll start at the bottom and they'll spend days turning over rocks in the middle of the day where these army cutworm moths are sleeping or they're estivating. They're basically, you turn over a rock and they're there, and they're eating these. And to me, it's so incredible that a bear that's 600, 700, 800 pounds, it's huge. And it's eating the moth. It's this big. And so what is it that we don't know as humans, that what is it that the moth eats? And what is it that we could possibly maybe do without knowing it, that we're affecting the moth, which is eaten by the grizzly bear, which eats the plants, and we're all connected. It's 2015, and we've been studying wildlife for years and years, and I believe that there's no one out there that knows all of the connections between all of the animals and the natural world. We just don't know, and it scares me sometimes when I hear people, you know, come up with grandiose plans, and I always wonder, well, you know, do we really know how we're going to affect the natural environment? In the fall, the bears will eat berries, and if you've been up here in Holden in September, and you hike out the 10-mile trail, it seems like every September, October, there's a bear out there eating all the berries, because there's these little drainages full of all these bear berries, service berries, and a couple years ago, I went out and just sat down and watched the bear. It was maybe from here to the hotel? Mm-hmm. That's what you call the hotel. It was about that far, and I just sat down and watched the bear, and they have these claws that act like sieves. So they go like this, and they pull this with both their claws, and it siphons out all the berries, and then they just go like this, and they just sit there, you know, one hand. And obviously, you can eat too many berries if you're a bear. And you get the berry runs.
Very bad.
I'll talk a little bit about getting along with bears. And this pertains to both grizzly bears and black bears. So somebody asked about that, about the controversy with grizzly bears and bringing them back. So somebody did do a phone survey, although the sample size is pretty small. But they did randomly call people up here and ask them this question about, do you support bringing grizzly bear backs or back to the North Cascades. In general, they found that most people are supportive. I think they need to do a bigger survey of folks. So bears aren't a problem. They really aren't. Grizzly bears, black bears are not a problem. They're in the wild. they're shy. They don't. They're not interested in you. When bears start to become a problem, is a couple things. When we introduce food into the picture, there are towns and cities like Reno, Nevada, and Aspen, Colorado, where people do not take care of their trash. And as soon as a bear gets a sniff of your trash, it's game over. They're going to come in and they're going to go back and they're going to go back and to keep going to your trash, and it's going to become a big problem. So the number one bear problem is garbage and trash. Back in Yellowstone, it used to be years ago, people would go to the local the dumpsters where all the park service would dump, and because the bears would just be feeding on the dumpsters. And I think 15 or 20 years ago, the park service figured out that's not healthy, and they got rid of their garbage dumps. Smart communities use bear-resistant trash containers. Holden Village does a great job of keeping garbage under control here. If you get a chance, talk to one of the old timers about the time a bear got stuck in the garbage truck or the bus. Has anybody heard that story?
Oh yes.
Well, ask the old timers about it. They used to take their garbage and put it in an old school bus, and it was parked right out here. One night, and near the end of the day, somebody went and closed the door and locked the door. Well, they didn't notice, but there was a bear in the bus. So they locked the bear into the garbage bus overnight. And I don't know what happened after that. It's a good story, though. Ask some of the old timers. This is just a great picture. This guy can't get actually into this bear canister. He decided to take a nap. And look at those claws. You know, if you go hiking up in Glacier National Park, there are places where they require you to carry these bear-resistant containers. Black bears become food conditioned. If they learn that they can get free food out of your garbage, it's a no-win situation for the bear and you. It's very, very dangerous. This is a whole list of other things that attract bears. Garbage, number one, birdseed, fruit, compost, pet food, all this stuff. Now, black bears love bird feeders, and this guy climbed up this tree, wiggled out on his claws on that line to get to that bird feed. And there was someone, where's the guy from Anchorage?
Back here.
Oh yeah, you had a bear go to your bird feeder, right?
Yeah, I used to not take our bird feeders down in the summertime until we had a brown bear, a grizzly, on our deck one morning, and they pulled the bird feeder concrete just out of the ground, just pulled it straight up. And the rule in Anchorage is as soon as it's denning time is done, is take your bird feeders away.
Right.
Really makes a huge difference.
Yeah, put your bird feeders away in the summer. If you're a rancher, a cattleman, electric fences work great because the bear comes up and they touch that electric fence with their nose, and once they get shocked, they learn not to go around that. If you go hiking or camping, a couple things to know. Hiking in groups is great. The main number one thing I do when I go out hiking by myself is I particularly if it's dense coverage, like there's places when you're going up to Holden Lake where the vegetation's pretty thick, or you can't see around a corner, I just whistle. I'll just whistle because I don't want to come around the corner and meet a bear. If you're camping in bear country, number one rule of thumb is you don't cook in front of your tent. In this case, if you were camping here, you'd go over here and cook your meal, assuming this is bear country. This is just a diagram hanging your food. Bring a bear-resistant container with you. What do you do when you actually encounter a bear on the trail? There are a couple of things. This is not one of the things that you do. The bears are wild animals, it's using common sense is going to keep you safe. There are four reasons that you will have a negative bear encounter. These are the four. If you surprise a bear, if you're walking down the trail, you come around the corner and boom, you're face to face with a bear. That's grounds for a negative encounter. Somebody was telling me about a mountain biker in Glacier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who was that? So somebody told me just this yesterday, there was a mountain biker. He was a park employee. He was mountain biking, came around the corner and ran smack into a bear. That's why whenever I get to a corner or I can't see ahead of me, if I know a bear's around, I'm whistling. Or I have a friend that just goes, "Hey bear, hey bear." Because 99% of the time, if a bear hears you or smells you and knows that you're coming, they're going to get off the trail. They're going to avoid you. The second reason you'd have a negative encounter is a mom with cubs. A bear on food. If a bear's eating a carcass and you come up to it and encounter it, leave it alone. It's gonna assume that you're there to try to take away the carcass that it's chewing on. And then number four is whenever you have bears that are human conditioned, meaning maybe they're coming in here to eat trash, trying to get to your trash. They're used to you being around, and you're used to them, and then there's something that's going to set it off. As I mentioned, I just threw this in here because the bear is going to avoid you. They're not dumb. They know that humans are dangerous. They've been shot at. They know that humans are not they're not prey. So 90% of the time, and this is true mainly all the times I've encountered a bear, it sees me or smells me and gets off the trail and runs away. Usually at a fast pace, they're running away. If you actually get charged by a bear, probably the safest thing you can do is drop down, get into a ball, cover your neck with your hands. If it's a passive bear and it's on the trail, make yourself large, be loud, make a loud noise. Bears will do a fake charge. They'll run up to you like they're going to attack you, and then they'll stop 10 feet short to intimidate you. I think if that happened to me, I'd probably drop down. I'd drop down and roll up into a ball. One of the best things you can do is carry bear spray. For $40 or $35, bear spray has been proven much more effective than a 357 Magnum revolver or a gun. The bear spray is much more effective. It's easier to deploy, except for the times when you bend over and it goes off in your face.
How long is bear spray good for? If you have an unopened can, can you carry that year after year and expect it to go off?
It's effective. It's good year after year because I have. I have a whole bunch of fake bear spray cans that I take with me that I let people shoot off, and they're still they're still going. And the good thing is that, you know, you can get five or six sprays out of it. But just some perspective, the chances of actually getting hurt or killed by a grizzly bear, pretty slim. You're more likely to die from a domestic dog attack, or you're also more likely, you know, to die from a snake bite or an allergic reaction to bees. The bears just are not a threat to you. I've learned that. It's made hiking in the wilderness so much more pleasant for me, knowing that if I'm loud, if I'm talkative, if I have bear spray, I'm pretty darn sure I'm going to be safe.
I have a question. I'd heard that this spring that the bears around here ate some of the fawns. Is that because of lack of food, or?
So yeah, I've heard that too. And being a scientist,
yes.
If I hear a story, I always want kind of proof.
Right.
So it is possible that they ate the fawns, and I've seen some of the deer. A couple of them around here are not very fat. And I'm wondering if they will eat a fawn. If
somebody said they saw it actually. Well,
I can believe that. Yeah.
Yeah, but like you'll see the bones.
What's that?
There's a carcass on the fawn.
Yeah, but so my question is, was that a bear or was it a coot?
It was a bear.
So somebody actually saw the bear pounce.
A group of people watched it.
Oh, okay.
I took pictures.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, the bear will eat. I mean, deer, and especially fawns are fair game.
I just wondered if it was because of the fire and there wasn't as much tender green stuff, undergrowth.
Nah, that we could speculate on all night long.
Okay.
Why? It's just normal.
Okay.
My answer would be that that's just normal. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, it's Bambi and it's cute.
Yeah.
But that's normal.
That's
the normal history. Bears eat deer.
Okay.
And you said opportunistic, so whether they're stalking them or finding carcasses too is always a question.
Yeah.
The second one that he just walked over it. It was just there because, you know, the mother had left it like they do another deer. And so, you know, the bear just went on a walk and, oh, there's another one.
And he ate it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So it's like, wow, there's lunch. I might as well have
pretty
lunch.
Pretty much, yeah. He just finished breakfast and had lunch.
It was second breakfast.
It was second breakfast. It was holding
summer. Yeah. Yeah. What you should understand is that's normal, and that's the natural web of life. I mean, everybody is somebody else's lunch. Okay, so pay attention because your quiz is coming.
Oh, that's right.
So how to tell grizzly bears and black bears? Bears are can be habitual. They'll use trails over and over again. All the trails around here, the bears and the bears are going to use those trails. It's easy walking. It's just like you and I. I'd rather walk on the trail than over and under logs and around boulders. Bear sign, dug up logs, scratches on the logs. If you go up hiking and you get on the Holden Lake Trail, if you go about 5 minutes up the trail, on your left-hand side you'll see a tree where the bark's been ripped off. If you look closer, you can see the claw mark ripped down the tree. It's really fresh. Grizzly bears will turn over rocks looking for grubs and insects. So if you're walking and you see rocks turned over, this is more bear sign. Logs flipped over. Here's an actual grizzly bear dig where they probably spent a couple hours digging for roots. Day beds, this is a little bit harder to spot in, unless you've seen, you know, you're accustomed to seeing. But, you know, after a bear eats a big meal, he'll sit down for a nap. Here's the bear scrape where they peeled off. This looks just like the one up the trail there. It peeled off and you see these claw marks going up and down.
Why did they do that to the trees?
So they're trying, they're eating the cambium. That cambium is full of minerals and fat, great stuff, great minerals.
And so that's black bear, not grizzly, or both?
That is black bear, mostly. As far as comparisons, there's difference between the black bears and the grizzly bears. Of course, up in Alaska, add another 100 or 200 pounds to these numbers. If you go up to, especially if you're talking about Kodiak brown bears up in Alaska. So when you see a bear in the wild, the misconception is that you can tell the difference between the fur coats. So grizzly bears can be black, and black bears can be brown. So color of the coat is not a distinguishing factor between the two. In this case, what is distinguishing is black bears have longer, bigger ears. They have a longer nose, more of a Roman nose. Grizzly bear has a flat face, almost dished, and very short, stubby ears. up here, the best way to tell what you're seeing is by the footprint, the paw print. Grizzly bears have a hump. Everybody usually knows that. Black bear has much shorter claws. You can see the claw mark on a grizzly bear, if this was in the mud, would be much more, 2 inches away from the paws. And then here's the biologist or the scientific way of distinguishing between a grizzly bear and a black bear. And what you do is you take you mark a spot on the base of the largest outside toe, and then you draw a line to the top of the pad, and then you extend that line out past the small toe. In this case, it would be the inside. And if 50% of that small toe is above that line, it's a grizzly bear. If 50% or more of that toe drops below that line, then it's a black bear.
Interesting.
If I lived up here at Holden, I would be on a constant lookout for bear prints, because if you find a grizzly bear print, you're going to be famous. Because they're just so rare. And even now when I go out hiking, I'm always looking for bear prints, because I want to be the one that says, hey, I'm going to take a picture of it, and I'm going to say, hey, I discovered a grizzly bear. And you'll be famous. You really will. You'll be in all the news and everything. That's if you get out of lunch. Okay, so here's your quiz. Is this a black bear or a grizzly bear?
Black bear.
Yeah, why?
Yes. Ears and the nose and the face.
Big, giant ears and a long nose, a more of a straight nose. But look at the coat.
Yeah.
Okay. Grizzly bear or black bear?
Grizzly
bear. So obviously this is a dead giveaway, the hump, the short ears. Now the hump is not always a great factor in distinct, because in this case the hump is perfect because this bear is on all fours on flat ground. But you can imagine looking at a grizzly bear on a steep hill where it's, you know, it's kind of like this. It's got maybe one paw up here and down here. And it'll look like it's got a hump. So you got to be careful with the hump. If it's perfectly flat ground, that would be easy.
Is the hump a fat reservoir?
No. So the hump, that's a good question. So the grizzly bears are diggers, and they got these big claws. That hump is tendons. That it's so muscular up here. They're huge tendons that go to the arms and the forearms for digging and grasping.
Huh.
It's like a bison. Mm-hmm. So, you know, bison have these huge heads, and bison have this incredible tendon that goes from the base of the neck to the shoulder blades to hold that head up.
Oh, nice.
So that head, a bison head is, it's huge, you know, it's this big. And that, so there's a big, giant tendon that holds the bison head up. Same with a grizzly bear. So, here's a grizzly, I'm sorry. What is that, grizzly or what? So now it's getting tougher, right?
A little further away.
Yeah, it's
do
further
have to look
away.
At the habitat?
It's a black bear.
It's a black bear.
It's a black
bear. It's a black bear because those ears are huge.
Right.
But, you know, look at the coat and you're kind of far away. It's getting harder. Now, and then here, this is, you know, what's that? Black bear or grizzly?
Black bear. Black bear.
Look at those baby ears, though.
Yeah. Well, but you can't, you know, they're kind of in the shadow.
Right.
The ears are kind of in the shadow, you don't really know. So,
that's a black.
Yeah, it's a black bear. But in the woods, we may get a glimpse for, you know, 10 seconds.
It won't stand still if you ask them.
Yeah. If you ask it to stand still, stand up, it might. But so you see why, like, as a scientist, you know, when we hear that someone says, I hear this a lot. A lot of people tell me, I saw a grizzly bear. And I have to be skeptical at first because it's easy to confuse. Here, this is really, remember I talked about being on a hillside? If you see that, what is it? I don't know. I don't know what it is, Tom.
It's a bear.
It's a bear. And then that's a yearling grizzly bear. Year old grizzly.
Grizzly.
Black bear.
What are we looking at?
That's kind of misleading with that big giant hump. I'm assuming it's on all fours. I would call this a grizzly bear. Well, that's all I have for the bears. And you have a question?
You know, people say you'll be okay unless it's a mom with cubs. What you just said sounds like almost every female is going to have cubs most of the time. And what do you do with those cubs? People say, well, that's when it's dangerous. But what do you do?
Well, so I'll tell you what happened yesterday. I think it was yesterday. Okay. Yesterday I went for a hike up to Holden Lake, and I came across a big pile of bear scat, fresh. Like, took it apart, looked in there, see what I could find, and I kept hiking. I got up to Holden Lake, I came back, I'm halfway down the trail, and here comes a guy, a hiker. Are you in here? He's not in here. He comes up, hiking in on the trail, and he goes, I just saw a mother bear with two cubs. And he said to me, I tried to get it off the trail. And I was, what? He goes, yeah, I tried to shoo it off the trail because I wanted to keep hiking. And he goes, I clapped and I waited. He said, I waited for it to move. Well, you're in the bear's habitat. You're in her home. She's got two cubs. Are you going to go try to shoo the bear off the trail? No. The thing to do, if it was me, was to back off and go home. I would not have tried to shoo the bear or to scare it. It's a mother with cubs. And you want to piss off a mom?
No.
Mess with her kids. I mean, come on. Mothers?
This is a principle.
Those of you that are mothers?
Right. Yeah.
So it's, in this case, to me, it was common sense. I would have, the thing to do was to turn around and go back and maybe wait somewhere. But he tried to shoo the bear off.
Shoo might mean eat me in bear talk. What? Shoo might mean eat me.
Yeah.
When we came up on Saturday, we saw, not too far from here, like an adolescent-sized bear, right on the road. I mean, it was scratching in the dirt around the road. And then it just, once Nancy pulled the bus up a little bit closer, it just took off. But I think it was one of the black bears that is brown.
Yeah, and 90% of the time the bear will just ignore you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a black bear a couple years ago. It was kind of circling for a few days.
Around camp?
Yeah, we actually had one come in of a chalet circle up the top.
Yeah, in that case, I would make sure everybody's taking care of their garbage. Because as soon as they if they were to get into a garbage bag, the bear's gonna, if they're not done, they have a memory. Next night, they'll come back at night looking for garbage, and then maybe they'll start coming at dusk or dawn, and then pretty soon they're coming during the daytime looking for food. You really, in Holden, the number one key up here for avoiding all bear problems is to take care of your garbage and your compost, and you won't have any problems. Well, thanks a lot. I don't want to keep you anymore.